Well, if you were here with us last Sunday night, you remember that we began a four-part series. Tonight will be part two in this series that we have titled The Main Thing. Someone once said that the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. And that really is what we are trying to grab a hold of in this series, is to understand what that main thing is, then to make sure that we're able to keep the main thing the main thing. And those of us that are believers in Christ, we probably understand that the Lord Himself is to be the main thing in our life. He should be our greatest love. He should be our chief pursuit. In fact, that is what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6, verse 33. When communicating to His disciples, He said, "Seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all of these things will be added unto you as well." Seeking Him first means that we seek Him before we seek anything else, but it also means that we seek Him above our seeking of anything else. He is to have that priority. And we also noticed last week that the verb that Jesus used there was in the present tense, which meant that it was to be a continuous action. It wasn't just to be something that we did once in our life. It is something that we are to do every day of our life, establishing Jesus as the highest priority, our chief pursuit. But as you and I know, there are many things in this world that war against that. We may desire to have the Lord first and foremost in our life, but so many other things are going to distract us. And so really what we are trying to do in this series is to look at how we can make sure that the lesser things of life do not take the place of the main thing in our life. And last week we saw how circumstances of life can often war against allowing the Lord to remain the main focus of our attention and our affection. As we looked at Psalm 27, which was written by David. David at the time in his life was going through some horrible circumstances, some very big trials in his life, which could have easily distracted him. But in verse 4 of Psalm 27, he said, "One thing have I desired of the Lord, and that will I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord, and to inquire in His temple." David did not allow the trials, the circumstances of his life to distract him from the one thing that ought to be above all things in his heart and in his life, that being communion with the Lord. But there are other things that also could be a distraction to us, and tonight we're going to look at one of those other things. Namely, it is busyness. Sometimes, just the busyness of life is all that it takes to usurp the Lord from being the main thing above all things in our hearts and in our lives. And this story here at the end of Luke chapter 10 is going to explain how we can make sure that we keep the main thing the main thing. Follow along with me. We're going to begin with verse 38. It is likely a familiar story to many of you. It involves two sisters whom Jesus is visiting. Their names are Mary and Martha. Verse 38. "Now it happened as they went that he entered a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, who also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. But Martha was distracted with much serving. And she approached him and said, 'Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Therefore, tell her to help me.' And Jesus answered and said to her, 'Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things, but one thing is needed. And Mary has chosen that good part, which will not be taken away from her." Back in the 1950s, there was a tremendous surge of new products that were being manufactured that were designed to make life a lot easier on American families. Freezers were being developed. Toasters were being developed. Washing machines that had a spin cycle were being manufactured. All of these things designed so that in the household, women wouldn't have to work as hard as they had been working up until that time. These machines would begin to do it for them. In addition to that, companies were beginning to produce frozen meals, frozen food that can then be put into these freezers, which would make the making of meals a lot easier as well. There were also many developments that were taking place in the workplace, as offices were now having new products that were available to them that were designed to make work more efficient and to make their workers able to produce more. Not only that, but the automobile was becoming more accessible to typical American families. And so getting around from place to place was also getting easier. And in reality, all of these things which were designed to make life simpler or easier, the experts of the day were actually saying that they saw a future where in America, the work week would consist of about 25, maybe 30 hours tops. And the rest of the time would just simply be leisure time for Americans to enjoy. Now, aren't you glad that you live in that type of a future? I mean, how many of us have actually realized that all we have to do now is work 25 hours, and the rest of the time we can be in a lounge chair with an iced tea in our hand? You're probably not experiencing that. I sure have not at all. You see, what has happened, though all of these products in and of themselves did reduce the amount of work that we had to put into getting things accomplished, with all of that extra free time, it seems that for the most part, all we have done is cram more things into our life. And our lives are no less full than they were when these other tasks took a long time to accomplish. We just have decided we have time to do more. And so we have taken on more responsibility. We have taken on more tasks that we now feel like we need to accomplish. In fact, I remember one day seeing a bumper sticker on a car that said this: God gives us all a certain amount of things to accomplish in life. Right now, I am so far behind that I will never die. Now, it was obviously tongue-in-cheek, but It did paint a picture that there are so many things that we feel like we need to get taken care of, that we don't ever feel like we're going to finish our to-do list. We always feel like there's something else that needs to get done, and once I finish this, then I can get onto that task, and it just becomes a process of day after day of just being busy, 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 always trying to take care of things. And to be honest with you, I really believe that we all desire to be like Mary was in this story. But we are living in a Martha world. We are living in a world that has created an environment where there's almost this sense of obligation to fill your life with more things. In fact, it is almost as if when someone asks you how you are doing and you say, "I am so busy with so many things," the insinuation is this: because I am busy, I am important. And the more things that I can do validates my life all the more. And so the more I do, the more valuable I am, the more my life has purpose. But I tell you what, that is not your life purpose. Your life purpose is not to accomplish the greatest amount of tasks. Our greatest purpose is our relationship, our communion with God. Sometimes that gets sidetracked because we begin to think that other things are more pressing and are more important at the time. The tyranny of the urgent, they call it. And so every day we come up with our list of things to do, to accomplish in the day. And we get busy doing all of those things, and sometimes time spent with God gets put off to the side. Here in this story, verse 38, Jesus, it says, comes to a certain village. The village isn't named here, but we know where it is. It is the town of Bethany. Bethany was about 2 miles away from Jerusalem, and it was where Mary and Martha lived along with their brother Lazarus. And it was a place that Jesus apparently often would retreat to. So to spend time with his friends, maybe just to get around, away from the crowds for a little bit. And this is one of those occasions in which Jesus is going to spend time with Mary and with Martha. And you would think that because they were believers, they followed after Jesus, that they would really have their act together. Because Christians are supposed to have their act together. But we're going to find out very clearly that Martha doesn't quite have her act together. She, I believe, loved the Lord with all of her heart. But things were getting in the way. Things in her life that she felt at the time were pressing and important were getting in the way of her really loving the Lord the way that she should have been loving the Lord. And that really was the crux of her problem. We know she loved the Lord because it says that she welcomed him into her home. The NIV put it this way: she opened her home to him. She opened her home to him because she loved him. She loved the time that he would spend there at her place. And I believe that her service to Jesus was her way of expressing her love. The problem was that her priorities were out of whack. And that's where the story really gets its emphasis, as Jesus has to gently and lovingly correct her. And we're going to see how this story unfolds. But here's the problem that I see is first and foremost, she had a wrong perspective. And that wrong perspective led her to having wrong priorities. Mary, on the other hand, had a right perspective. And because her perspective was right, her priorities were right. And we're going to see right now how that really unfolds. Look again at verse 40. But Martha was distracted with much serving, and she approached him and said, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Therefore, tell her to help me." Now, I hope you get the picture of really what is going on here. I really kind of want to paint what I envision is taking place. Here is Martha. She has invited Jesus as her guest of honor to spend some time with her. And her sister Mary, of course. And probably she spent all morning cleaning the house to get it ready for the main guest, who was Jesus, to arrive. All morning, making sure that everything was dusted, everything was in its place, everything just looked presentable because the guest of honor was going to show up. And then when Jesus does show up, she runs into the kitchen and grabs the tray of hors d'oeuvres and brings it out to the living room area and places it on the table. And there is Jesus and Mary, and there are probably a few others that were there as well. And she asks everybody what they want to drink. Gets their orders, runs back to the kitchen, goes to the oven, checks on the rolls to see how they're doing, gets all of the drinks on a tray, goes back into the living room area, begins to give out all of these drinks, and there is Mary still sitting there. Martha is now sweating because of all this running back and forth, and probably her level of irritation is beginning to rise as she's realizing that Mary's not doing nothing. Mary's just sitting there talking, maybe laughing, and just conversing with Jesus. But the pot roast might be burning, so she's got to go back into the kitchen and check and make sure that that's okay. And this back and forth is happening in Martha's life, from the kitchen, you know, to the living room area, and back to the kitchen, and back and forth. All the while, she sees her sister sitting there, and apparently, Mary doesn't care. And maybe Jesus isn't caring either, because he doesn't seem to be concerned about what is taking place. And so this level of frustration is rising. Has that ever happened in your life? You know, you're just running here and there and doing all these things, and you know, those that you think ought to be helping are just sitting. I see that happening in Martha's life. So much so that finally the volcano explodes. And in the living room, she calls out to Jesus for help. Jesus, do you see what's happening right here, right now? You know, I mean, I keep going back and forth and back and forth. My sister is just, you know, sitting there talking to you, which I know is all good and all, but I need help. I'm the only one doing anything right now. Can you please tell my sister to help me? You see, here was the problem, I believe, in Martha's perspective. Her perspective was this, is that Jesus is the guest of honor. And what I need to do for my guest of honor is to serve him. Now, I think that Mary also saw Jesus as the guest of honor. But Mary's perspective was that you need to sit with your guest of honor. Sit and talk with him. Sit and converse with him. Sit and commune with him. So while both of them were looking at Jesus as their guest of honor, one thought the highest priority was to serve him. The other thought the highest priority was to sit with him. And that's why Martha's frustration began to boil over, is because her perspective was all wrong in this situation. And that is why Jesus, after her many outbursts, says to her in verse 41, "Martha, Martha." Now, you always have to pay attention when Jesus calls your name twice. In every situation that I could find, when Jesus calls out to somebody, calling their name twice, it was that something was off in their life, and Jesus was about to address it. I would say that it's the equivalent of when your mom used your last name when she called you. You know, when your mom used your last name, you knew that you were off. Something was off in your life, and mom was about to call you out on it. Well, Jesus several times used, you know, the pronunciation of the name twice. Not only here, but he did it with Simon, Peter. "Simon, Simon, Satan has asked for you that he may sift you as wheat, but I have prayed for you, Simon, that you would not give in to the temptation. But when you do, return to me. Strengthen your brethren." See, Jesus knew what Simon was about to do. He was going to deny the Lord three times because Satan wanted to take him down. Jesus was giving him that heads up, giving him that warning. "Simon, you don't want to miss this. You want to hear what I'm telling you right now. Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" In Acts chapter 9, Saul of Tarsus was the enemy of Christians. He was on his way to Damascus in order to persecute those that were followers of Christ. When the Lord had to knock him silly, there he is, staring into this bright light from the ground, and a voice from heaven speaks to him, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" The Lord had to get his attention. "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who killed the prophets and stoned those sent to her, how I have longed to gather you together as a hen gathers her chicks underneath her wings, but you were not willing." Jesus having to call out the nation of Israel because they were missing their Messiah. And every time that Jesus repeats a name twice, he had a very strong message to say. And in this passage, I think it's very much the case. As he says her name twice, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things." You see, her wrong perspective led to wrong priorities. I want you to make note of what Jesus said. Many things. You are worried and troubled about what? You are worried and troubled about many things. You see, I think that Jesus was bringing to her attention something that was really beyond the immediate context of what was taking place. In that immediate context, she had many things going on in the kitchen, many things going on in the household because she was trying to take care of her guest of honor. But in reality, that was just the tip of the iceberg in Martha's life. It was a pattern. This was a pattern in her life where doing all of these things was taking the place of what really mattered. And her wrong perspective was now leading to wrong priorities, and she felt like she needed to get all of these things done. You see, I don't think it was that she did not want to sit with Jesus. I think she absolutely wanted to sit with Jesus. As soon as I get all of these other things done. And I really believe that that's our problem as well. It's not that we don't want to sit with Jesus. We will. As soon as. And then we come up with our list. You see, that was really where her priorities had gotten out of whack. Man, she loved the Lord. She just didn't realize that her love for the Lord was now skewed because she thought that all of these other things were of a greater priority. And the result was this. Jesus says, "You are worried, you are troubled," in verse 41. And then one verse back, it mentions that she was distracted. Those three words could sum up Martha's life. Worried, troubled, and distracted. You know what's interesting about that word distracted? The Greek word literally meant to drag around. Martha was being dragged around by all of these responsibilities, these things that she felt like were so important. So she was being dragged here to take care of this. She was being dragged there to take care of that. And then she had to go put out this fire. And then she had to take care of that responsibility. And then there was something else that happened that she didn't foresee was going to take place. And so her life was literally just being dragged around from this, that, and the other. So that the thing that really mattered was being set aside in order to take care of all of these little things. And the little things had now taken place of the main thing. And Jesus now is calling her out on that very issue. Now I wonder, does that describe your life? Do you feel like right now, you love the Lord, you really do like to spend time with the Lord and want to do just that, but you are being dragged around by all of this other stuff? And in your mind right now, you feel like, I will spend time with the Lord as soon as, and then you can fill in the blank. I have to tell you, with all honesty, that this is a message that is probably preached to me right now more than it is preached to anybody else that I'm talking to. The Lord really showed that to me as I was working on this message this week. This is an issue that I have dealt with, I really believe, for most of my Christian life. Is that I do get worried and distracted and dragged around by lesser things. And sometimes it takes place of the greater thing. Several years ago, I had made on the side of my house, it's not the house that I live in now, but on the side of my house, I wanted to create a garden. A garden that would be a place that I could sit and just spend some time with the Lord. So I built this arbor that I had white climbing roses growing over the top of the arbor, and it had a little wooden gate that was like the entryway into paradise, right? And you open the gate and you walk through, and I did a little in-ground fish pond that was there. It had a gravel walkway that went around the pond to where there was a wheelbarrow that had flowers growing over the side of the wheelbarrow. And then on the other side of the pond, there was some purple wisteria that I had groomed into being like a canopy that came out over the top of an Adirondack chair. And that would be where I would sit. And I could pray there, and I could read there, and I could just spend some time with the Lord there. And I called it my meditation garden. But I got to tell you, it never fully became what I wanted it to be. Because I would go in there and I would sit and I would have a cup of coffee and I would have my Bible. I'm going to spend some time with the Lord. And as I'm sitting there, sipping the coffee, reading my Bible, there's that weed right there. There's a weed in the flower bed. I need to get rid of that weed. And then I'd notice something else that now is totally overgrown. It really needs to be cut back. And why is that plant dying over there? There must be something wrong with the drip system. And I tell you, I would sit there and want to spend time with the Lord, but in all reality, I got distracted by all of these other things and began to come up with the list of all of the things that now I got to take care of. And the Lord was now forgotten about because I need to get my garden in order. I got to get it looking the way that I want it to look. And sometimes our lives can become exactly that. We somehow mess up in our perspective, and then our priorities end up getting out of whack. And so it was with Martha. She thought she was doing what she should be doing, serving her guest of honor. But what Jesus was going to point out to her was that, Martha, your perspective's wrong, and that's why your priorities are wrong. But Mary, she has the right perspective. Because of that, she has been able to maintain the right priority. Notice again what he says in verse 42. After he had said, Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things. But one thing is needed. Again, if you have your Bible, I want you to circle or underline or highlight those two words, one thing. You may recall that last week, when we were taking a look at the story of David, those two words were also found in Psalm 27, verse 4. One thing have I desired of the Lord, that will I seek. David was seeking the one thing that really mattered. And now Jesus is calling Martha on her issue that the one thing that should have been the main thing was now being replaced by the many things that had become a distraction to her. So the right perspective is to understand that Mary had chosen the good part, and that was the one thing. What was the one thing? It was communion with Jesus. It was communion with the guest of honor. It's sitting down with him, conversing with him, allowing him to minister to her heart, to build her up spiritually. That is what Mary wanted. That is what she desired. And so that is exactly what it was that she was doing. And she was not going to allow busyness or all of the supposed responsibilities to get in the way of that being the main thing. And it was the same with David. David was not going to allow his trials to get in the way of the main thing. So both of them, both Mary and David, were able to keep the right perspective and allow the main thing to remain the main thing. Only one thing is needed. That's not going to be taken away from her. You know, the thing that for many of us may be the struggle is this, is that we look at the many things that we have going on in our life, and they're good things. They're needed things. In fact, you feel like you would not be a responsible person if you were not doing these very things. And that may be true, I want you to know. There are a lot of good things that need to be done. But if a good thing has taken place of the best thing, in all honesty, it's no longer a good thing. You cannot allow even good things to take the place of the best thing. Best comes first, then good. Make sure that you take care of the main thing first, and that is that communion that we all need to have with the Lord. But because Mary had that right perspective, she had the right priority. And that right priority was this, is that she understood that devotion came before service. Devotion to the Lord comes before service, even service to the Lord. I want you to understand that, and I want you to follow along with me as I kind of elaborate on this a little bit, because many of us are involved in very good things. Serving the Lord You know, maybe you serve in Sunday school. Maybe you've got a life group that you lead at your home. Maybe in some other way you are giving a significant amount of your time to serving the Lord. And your service of the Lord is, as far as you are concerned, your act of worship and your act of love to the Lord. And it very well may be. The problem arises is when the service has supplanted the devotion. And that was the problem that happened in the church of Ephesus. Jesus wrote a letter to the church of Ephesus in Revelation chapter 2, in which he had to correct them. Jesus, speaking to that church in that letter, he said, "I know your works." And then he went on to explain what he was seeing in their lives, what they were doing. And the works that they were doing were actually very good works. But then he goes on and says to them, "But this I have against you, you have left your first love." What he was telling them is this, is, you know what, you got a lot of things going good at the church. You guys are busy, 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 you got activities going on, you got ministry taking place, you guys are doing a lot of good things. But somewhere down the line of doing all of that service, the love for me, what originally was your motive for doing the things that you did, you've lost that love. It's now no longer being done out of love. It is now just impulsive service. And it would only be a matter of time if it was devoid of the devotion and the love for Jesus that even the service would begin to fall apart. When I was a kid, I used to try and hunt for lizards, because that's what boys do. Love to find lizards, you know, under a rock or climbing on a wall. And me and my friends would often go on lizard hunts, and we had even built lizard cages so that when we caught them, we can put them in the cages and so forth like that. But if you've ever gone on a lizard hunt, you know, if you go to grab for that lizard and all you grab is his tail, all you will have is his tail. Because he's going to let that tail go, which lizards have the capability of doing, and what you have in your hand is just a lizard tail, and the lizard gets off free. But if that has ever happened to you, you would also notice that that lizard tail is wiggling all over the place, even without the attachment to the lizard, and it will do that for several minutes. And as a kid, that was even cooler than having the whole lizard. It's just having a lizard tail that's in your hand and it's just wiggling all over the place. And I always thought as a kid, how does that happen? It's not even attached anymore. Well, what is actually happening is that it's, you know, these nerves inside that tail is still sending signals and it's firing off and so forth. Though it has now no attachment to the brain and it has no attachment to the heart, it's still for a period of time will wiggle and will look like it is alive, but in reality, it's now dead because no heart, no brain. A few minutes later, it slows down until it's completely stopped. Our lives can be like that. You know, at some point, you're doing what you do for the Lord because of your devotion to the Lord. You love the Lord, you're following after the Lord, you want to serve Him in some way, you get involved in a ministry, and the whole motive for doing what you are doing is out of love for the Lord. And so you're busy serving, but the devotion to God is still first and foremost. But if at some point that devotion to the Lord gets sidetracked and sidelined, you can still be really busy doing all of these ministries for the Lord, but it's now just busyness because you're not attached to the heart of Jesus or the head of the body of Christ, who is Jesus Himself. We have to remain attached. And you see, Mary evidently understood that when I have the right perspective, I will have the right priority. And the right priority is this: I need to stay attached. And here's the thing, guys. devotion is more important than service because you can serve without being devoted. But you cannot be devoted without it leading to genuine, heartfelt service. It's not that the Lord does not want us to serve Him. It's that the devotion has to come first. If the service comes before the devotion, it's only a matter of time before the service has no life in it anymore. And so Jesus makes Martha aware of this by pointing out that He is not going to take away what Mary was doing, that she could continue to sit at His feet because she had her priorities right and she had her perspective right. Now that is not to say that, well, all we need to do then is to sit at Jesus' feet. Let's just sit at Jesus' feet every day, all day long. We don't have to do anything because those aren't the priorities. He's the priority. Let's just sit at His feet. Remember, it's sit at His feet first. It is highest in priority. It is highest in order of the way that we do things. There are other things that need to be done. And in fact, I want to point out something to you, I think, that is often overlooked. Something that is said in verse 39 in regards to Mary. It says, "And she had a sister," meaning Martha had a sister called Mary, "who also sat at Jesus' feet and heard His word." I want you to make note of that word "also." Mary also sat at Jesus' feet. What that is telling us is one of two things. It's either saying this, is that Martha sat at Jesus' feet and Mary also. Or it is saying that Mary helped serve along with Martha and also sat at Jesus' feet. That's the only two explanations of why that word "also" would be there. Either Martha also sat at Jesus' feet along with Mary, or Mary also served and sat at Jesus' feet. Well, the first it cannot be, because the whole point of the story is that Martha did not sit at Jesus' feet, which leaves us with the only conclusion that we can make is this, is that Mary did help, and she also sat at Jesus' feet. Maybe it was is that Mary was helping until the guest of honor showed up. And then she knew that now it's time to sit at His feet. Yeah, there's some stuff that needs to be done. You know, not all the dishes got put away. Not everything got completely done the way that it should have. You know, some of the laundry was still out maybe. Who knows what? But the guest of honor is now here, and so it is time to forget about that stuff. It's time to sit at His feet. And so it's not that Mary did not do anything. It's that she also sat at His feet. That's important for us to realize. Here's the thing. I really believe that Martha did learn her lesson here. For time's sake, we're not going to turn there, but you might want to make note and look at it later, that in John chapter 12, the first handful of verses, a story is told of another occasion in which Jesus was visiting with Mary and with Martha and with Lazarus. And it says there in the passage, in verse 2, as a matter of fact, that Martha was serving. You might think initially that, okay, maybe she didn't learn her lesson, because now she's still doing what she was doing in Luke chapter 10. But there's a noticeable difference in John's telling of that occasion. And that is this, is that we don't see any frustration on Martha's part. We don't see any worry. We don't see any distraction. We don't see any trouble. We just see that Martha was serving. And it may have been that she was serving at that time because she had already spent her time of devotion with the Lord. The point being is this, is that it's not that we set aside all service. It's that we get our priorities right. Devotion comes before service. And she learned that lesson, and she began to live out that lesson. Years ago, I remember hearing the story of a college professor who, on the first day of a class that he was teaching, all of the students were sitting there, and he brought out in front of them and set on the table a large glass jar. Without saying a word, he took out a bag of stones that were about the size of golf balls, and he began to fill up that glass jar with these stones until those stones had reached the very brim of the jar. Then he turned to his class, his students, and he asked them, "Is this jar full?" They all looked at him and nodded, "Yeah, it's pretty full to me." Then he took out another bag. This bag had gravel in it. He went to that same jar. He began to pour the gravel into the jar. And that gravel, because it was smaller, it began to filter around those larger stones all the way to the bottom. And he poured in that gravel until it had also reached up to the brim of that jar. Then he turned to his students and he said, "Now is this jar full?" Well, they're a little bit more hesitant to answer. But they began to say, "Yeah, we think it's full now." Pulled out another bag. In this bag, it had very fine sand. He began to pour it into the top and shake the jar. And that fine sand began to filter down to the bottom. And he kept doing this until that fine sand had made it again to the brim of the jar. One more time, he turned to his students. "Is the jar now full?" Nobody said a word. At which time, he pulled out a pitcher of water. He began to pour the pitcher into the jar until the water had reached the brim. Then he asked another question. "What do you think I'm trying to teach you?" And he got a smattering of different answers. One of the answers was, "I think I know. It's no matter how busy you think you are, you can always fit something else in your life." No. He said this, "Unless you put the bigger things in first, you will never get them in later. Unless you put the bigger things of your life in your life first, you will never get them in later." I have a jar that I've had in my office that is to remind me of the same thing, although for my jar I used walnuts and I used rice. I think I have had this jar for about 20 years, but I've always kept it in my office as a reminder to myself of this very point. Had I decided to fill this jar with the rice first and then try and start shoving walnuts in it, I wouldn't get a single walnut in. Had to start with the walnuts first. Once it was filled with walnuts, the rice could easily fit around it. But you got to put the big things in first. You got to keep the main thing the main thing. And it might be that some of us desire the Lord to be the main thing, but we have allowed other things to crowd Him out. So I want to encourage you tonight that if your life has just gotten too busy, and maybe it is busy with good things, but the good things have taken place of the better thing, the best thing, maybe it's time to empty the jar and start all over again. Put the main thing in first. There will be time for the other things. In fact, your life will have a lot less trouble, a lot less worry, and a lot less dragging around if you start with the main thing. Let's pray.